Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.
Merkel Media.
This was all circulating around the base that a giant had been killed, but no one was supposed to talk about it.
I saw three long bony fingers reach up underneath the door, curl up to grab it, and then disappear.
When he came over to me, dude, he slithered over to me.
And this giant comes out of the cave and they're all frozen. And he starts running and firing at this giant. Well, the giant moves. He's got a spear in one hand and he's running really fast and spears Dan and holds him up like this. Somebody yells, shoot him in the face, shoot him in the face. They basically decapitate him.
Got closer. When he got about 15 yards away from me, I raised that 12 gauge and I blow this head off.
I feel something pulling at my leg, and I look over, and there are two small, gray entities pulling at me, and they're literally, I'm getting pulled off the bed.
I reach my hand into this bush, and I touch air. Couldn't breathe, and I couldn't move, because I know I'm seeing a monster.
Hey guys, continuing from last week, we are taking some time off around the office here, but we have some guest co-hosts for you. Jay and Justin from Cryptids of the Corn came down from Ohio to record this episode for you. This is a fun conversation, so let's get to Jay and Justin from Cryptids of the Corn right now.
Welcome back to the Confessionals podcast. I am the great and powerful mystery.
And I'm J-Clone 27.
And this doesn't look like our studio.
Well, we're in a different place.
It's a lot nicer.
You know, it's nicer than our studio. It's nicer than that shack we keep hearing about.
This is
great.
So we're Crimson of Corn podcast. We're taking over for the second year in a row, the Confessionals for a week. So Tony can go relax and enjoy his family. Last time I heard, I think he's somewhere in the northern mountains.
Yeah.
Searching for Dogman, Bigfoot. Those kind of things.
Well, you know, he's a busy man doing busy things and you're spending time with his family. It's good to just, you know, spend that quality time you need with other people in your life. It's good. It's good to take a break from work.
It's hard, super hard work, and they're always doing something. So they need to relax in a bit and go just enjoy the family.
Well, I'm glad we could provide this outlet for him, you know, so he can't escape for once. You know, it's good.
We're super honored that he asked again. I mean, it's amazing time. It really is. We enjoy it thoroughly.
Very honored.
So hopefully you guys are ready. Oh, hopefully you're ready.
Hopefully. I was wondering who you were. I forgot there's a camera right there.
I know. I'm not used to cameras either.
All right. I don't know. I'm just used to looking at you. This is the first time we've ever been filmed.
Yeah. No, it's a lot.
It's a little different. Yep. Yeah. So welcome. Welcome.
So what do we got today?
Well, we are in studio going to discuss a very important topic that you, Mr. E, just wrote a book about.
Yeah. But before we get rocking and rolling into that subject, living UFOs, why don't you tell everybody where they can listen to our show?
You can find us on Cryptids of the Corn podcast. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, that you just search that, you'll find us. But on cryptsofthecorn.com, you can find all of our information, all of our links, and all of our episodes. And we have a member space there. We have a Patreon space.
Which is what?
Crypts of the Corn /?
I think. You'll find it. You'll
go to Patreon, search Crypts of the Corn. We'll be there.
Cryptids of the Corn.
Of the Corn, yes. Like children, but cryptids.
Yep. So, yeah, Tony asked us to come back again. We're super honored. No, seriously, without, you know, all the joking and stuff aside, we love Tony to death. Tony's helped us out dramatically over the years, and this is a true honor to do this again.
In studio this time.
In studio.
It's amazing. Yes.
And it's a lot better, I mean, quality and stuff like that. So, like Jay said, I just came out with a book, Living UFOs, The Ocean Above Our Head, A Study of Atmospheric Biology. You can get it at cryptidsofthecorn.com under the books tab. If you're international, you can get it on Amazon. And last time we were here last year, we gave a more basic intro into the subject of getting into these things, organic UFOs. We talked about the mountain ranges. We talked about the layers of the atmosphere. Maybe we'll go over that again real quick, just the snippets of it. But what do you think? I mean, we've been doing this topic for 3 years.
Just about 3 years. And it's crazy to see how it comes to fruition. You find the book has been in talks for, I mean, almost the whole time since you first brought up the subject, messaging and calling my phone saying they're all mushrooms. They're all mushrooms. Talking about UFOs, that is. And, but we, you know, we took that slice of what we think UFOs are. And we think, you know, maybe somewhere between 5%, and this is all speculation, 5 to 10% are that living creatures. This atmosphere above us is full of life. You know, life finds a way. What is that, Dr. Ian Malcolm?
It is Dr. Ian Malcolm.
Yes, life
from Jurassic Park.
Correct. Life finds a way. You know, that soft disclosure in Hollywood. We've found a space of where life, you know, can exist. There's a big opening. It's the largest biome on Earth.
A literal ocean above our heads. And I mean, the title is not satire or anything like that. It is a zone. The book covers it, and we talked about it last year, so I'll just briefly touch on it again. We live in what's called the troposphere. It kind of ends at 10 miles. Above that's the stratosphere, and that goes from like 10-ish to like 35-ish, 45-ish miles. And then above that is the mesosphere. So we were all taught in school that the higher you go in the atmosphere, the colder it gets, and that's not true, kind of true, you know, depends on what layers you're looking at. So as you go up in the troposphere where we live, and keep in mind everybody at home, commercial jetliners don't leave this zone. For the viewers, I'll try to send the link over for the picture. Commercial jet, we have very, very few aviation pieces of technology that leave the troposphere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that 10 miles because it's above the ozone layer. So as you go up, it gets colder, colder, colder. Once you cross the troposphere into the stratosphere, it starts getting warmer again. And this 35, 45 miles up, where it meets the mesosphere, is like 50 degrees and full of liquid water. So it's an ocean. And like Jay already said, it is the biggest single biome on the planet that has had so little research done in.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the NASA studies last year, where basically the synopsis of that is that NASA investigated with these devices to grow bacteria and stuff, where they're expecting to find about 14 species of life. And they ended up finding over 14,000.
Yeah, that's a little bit more.
And they think it was more because the things and started eating the other things in the collection device. Pretty much every biological clade of life besides vertebrates was found, had a representative up there. That means we're going to talk about jellyfish.
Yeah, what does that mean? Like, give me some examples. Jellyfish.
Like, that means a jellyfish cousin.
Okay.
That mean like an actual jellyfish that you would think of in the ocean.
Correct.
Their family group is massive, though. So it has a member, fungus, several invertebrates. I mean, even insect species were found up there. So they actually, and then we found plankton. We found aeroplankton. So plankton that lives in, which plankton is a catch-all term for microbe and macro organisms that are in big clouds. So it can be algaes and baby, in the ocean, it's algaes and baby crustaceans and microorganisms that's as big as they get in larval fish and eggs. So there's actual aeroplankton in the sky that some companies in the Middle East are actually using as fuel. They're harvesting it right now and using it as fuel. And we did a whole episode called Aeroplankton.
Mm-hmm.
You can look that up. Obviously, going to plug a lot of our stuff during this because we've done a lot of work on this subject.
But yeah, it all overlaps. It all ties in.
Yeah.
It plays an important role. And, you know, us doing this for 2 years now, just this subject in particular, two to three, I can't remember when exactly it started.
I'm going to say it's three.
Close to the beginning of when we started podcasting, but just doing this so long, it's uncovered more and more and more and more pieces of the puzzle are falling in. And I'm with you on this because at first I was a little skeptical when you first presented this idea to me, but the more and more we just go over it, it just makes so much more sense.
So we're getting ready to start talking. This episode, I really wanted to go into the types because last year we just barely touched on the types. So I wanted to give the types, I wanted to talk about their respective biology with them, and I wanted to give encounters with all of them. And you've heard all of these, but I think one.
Exciting.
I want to play a fun game for this episode.
Okay.
I'm going to give you one of the types, and I want you to give your definition, your explanation, like, of the type.
Oh,
and then I'll read what I have.
Now you're really testing my memory.
Well, no, I think you're going to do fine.
Okay.
I think it's always fun that one of the jokes we do at conferences and stuff like that is you describe what I used to do for a living.
Oh, that's pretty fun.
Because it's 80% right.
Yeah, I get most of it there.
And when we have biologists come up to the table and stuff like that, that was really funny. Oh, we just had one where it was, I won't name the aquarium, a large aquarium worker, and you were describing to her stuff that I did. And she's like, I know what those words mean. I do this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah. I was not at the table.
Right.
I walked up.
Thank goodness. Because yeah. I realized quickly I was very much out of my element.
So first one, this is probably my favorite type, the manta rays.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you give a general overview of the manta rays? So why don't you kind of give what their looks, their sizes, that kind of stuff that you remember?
So from what I remember, I always go back to my very first experience with these or learning about these, which was the Ohio River manta ray, that famous account. And that one, I don't remember roughly the size, but, you know, six to 10 feet wide.
That was like the size of a car.
Yeah,
the body, the main body was the size of a car.
Right. Smaller, but yeah. They can go anywhere up to the size of like a Boeing. So gigantic, but anywhere within that range, they're translucent. We're speculating that they could be filter feeders, but they're big, graceful, slow moving, translucent creatures.
So I'll read you what I have.
All right.
This group of sightings is collectively known as they basically match well-known sea creatures as manta rays. They may fill the same niches in the upper atmosphere as whales fill in our oceans, or manta rays do too, these massive, like you mentioned, filter feeders. Their appearance is superficial of that of the manta ray. Differing from their ocean counterparts, this group is often humongous, being reported as the size of 747s. So like you said, the Boeings.
There we go.
You know, 300-400 feet long sometimes, you know, and wider than that for some of our bigger ones. And they have close to translucent skin. So some of our eyewitnesses we had on the show that we've talked to, and many of the accounts in the book describe when they're up close, they have this bluish tinge.
Mm.
And you can kind of see some of the organs inside, but far away, they appear to be translucent.
Because mm-hmm. We had some people tell their accounts they had seen the stars behind them through them.
Yeah, like looking through clear jelly
mm-hmm.
is the best way that some of those people, like you can see the background, but it's not like the predator thing where it's a little distorted. It's still pretty distorted when you're up close. You can tell there's flesh there. They have been seen slowly flapping their quote-unquote wings, but the motion has little effect on their loft abilities. So this seems to be more steering. By that, I mean, they appear to float, and when they flap their wing appendages, they're not propelling themselves with it. They're not flapping like a bird. They're not doing that. They're more likely just steering with them. So they probably have gaseous chambers inside their body. In fish and aquatic organisms, we call these swim bladders, where it's a big gas-filled organ that will fill up with body-made gases to help with buoyancy. And some animals, some fish, will burp up gases to sink, or they will. They have other means of doing this, but with pressure changes, they can swell. So I think that these guys have a similar chamber, that their huge, massive bodies are more like a hot air balloon. Not that they're hot inside, they're capturing, or like a blimp or a zeppelin. They have a lighter-than-air gas inside that they are probably producing, and they float, and they just kind of steer with their wings.
So they're more buoyant than the air around them, basically.
Yeah. And when we've heard all these encounters, we've talked about them tons of times. These guys never seem to be moving that fast. Several of the encounters we've had on, what do they always say? It's a sense of awe.
Right, like seeing a whale.
Like seeing a whale. They talk about that a lot, and they're huge, and nobody's ever been scared of these things. These creatures, like I said, use their wings to steer while their bladders raise and lower in the air. They're evidence that they're very slow, and there's peaceful emotions. The behavior reminds us heavily of open ocean filter feeders. So we've already compared to whales and manta rays. That these guys, the way they maneuver, the way they swim through the air, the way that they carry themselves, seems very, very reminiscent of the ocean animals, the filter feeders. And that's called convergent evolution.
And I remember when we first started talking about the Ohio River manta ray, you talked about that figure eight motion it was seen flying in. Makes perfect sense. It's a filter feeding pattern.
Yep. And we'll talk about that. We'll actually bring up that story here in a minute. They have been known to also have large bioluminescent organs on their bodies. So the manta rays have been described as everything from being just the rough manta ray shape with the wings, no, sometimes a short tail, sometimes a long tail in the head, to having patches on their bodies that are bioluminescent, to having hanging bioluminescent organs. So you get the variety. They may be able to retract these things. Bioluminescent organs in most sea animals can turn on and off. Some animals produce it themselves, and some others hold bacterial colonies inside their body and trigger bioluminescent remarks from like dropping sugars to these colonies and stuff. These lights can lead to a bit of confusion for metallic craft until observers get close to inspect. Like they look, we talk about some of the lights look triangular, where you have the triangle UFOs. Not all of these are these things. I think it's mostly the other things, but they have a pattern that's kind of similar. So until they get right overhead, and like we've already said, people seeing the jelly, like looking through them with the lights, they kind of hold a similar pattern. They are often doing, like we've already said, these large figure eight motions. This is an effective use of sea animals for filter feeding. Why you do this figure eight patterns is when you come back around, the swirl will be right in your face. So if you're filter feeding, you want to push as much air or water, depending on where you are, through your gills, through your feeding mechanisms to kind of jet stream those things. So when you do these big figure eight patterns, there's a swirl of food essentially waiting for you to come back. It's hyper efficient. We believe these animals are using the same technique as their ocean counterparts. Encounters with these behemoths are often related to storm systems and air pressure fluctuations. These creatures do not seem to pose a direct threat to humans, as far as we notice, and they don't really seem to notice our presence at all. And you see, a lot of people have that experience with manta rays in the ocean. They're so big, they don't care.
No, they're just doing their thing.
Yeah, they just really don't care. So do you remember that one for the most part?
The Ohio River manta ray?
Yeah.
Yeah, for the most part. I know it had a... The significant part of that story was it had two separate sets of witnesses.
Yep.
Which I believe were seen at on two different nights, or was
it was the same. I'm going to try to remember right. Keep in mind, we've done hundreds and hundreds of these encounters.
Yeah.
And this was one of the first ones we've ever did. I believe it was the same night.
Okay.
Over different counties. One was a mother and a daughter, and the other one was an older couple. I had one, and they both reported to separate police stations.
Correct. That was the important part.
Yeah.
They both separately reported it to separate police stations that didn't communicate at first. Like, one got one and told the other one. They were two separate stories, so cooperation validated it.
What they seen was a manta ray-shaped creature, and by that I mean the rough body shape. We have tons of pictures of in the books of sketches and stuff, where, you know, the rough kind of head, tail tapers off, and these big wings. They were seeing one of these creatures, no eyes or nothing like that, doing these figure eights over the Ohio River, and I believe it was March. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. And there are insect hatches coming off the river at that time. So we theorize it may have been feeding on hatching insects off the Ohio River. And the witnesses described it then after it was done and started gently going back up towards the upper atmosphere. And like you already said, that this was reported by two different people or two different groups of people that did not know each other, two separate sheriff stations all along the Ohio River. And the one, the mother and daughter, I believe they also reported that other people had stopped and pulled over and were looking at this thing, and they never did. They never, reported it.
Okay, gotcha.
Now, we have one that this one is actually in the next book, so the book two. The Manta Ray Ovipositor.
Okay.
So I'm going to read an encounter. A Kentucky resident is driving late at night when they observe a huge translucent manta ray shaped entity flying above them. And here's the actual, it's from Burnside, Kentucky. My daughter called me around 1:20 a.m. to inform me that she was in the ER with a kidney stone. She requested I come to the hospital and take her home, as she had already passed the stone, but had given quite a bit of pain medication and was advised not to drive. I picked her up from the hospital and I took her home. She assured me that she would be fine and wanted to sleep as we needed to go to work in the next morning. So she was sleeping in the car. I drove about 6 to 7 miles home, pulled into my driveway, and got out of the car. It was about 3 a.m. I looked up at all the stars in the sky, noting their beauty, and suddenly above me, I heard a whoosh sound. Directly above me, about 50 to 100 feet off the ground, I looked up to see something both beautiful and terrifying at the same time. There was a large stingray-shaped entity slowly pulsating as it flew above me. It was larger than my house, which is a 2,500 square foot house. I noted that I could see the stars through the body, although in the outline was clearly visible. So talking about that, where you can see through the jelly, but you can still see the animal too. Mm-hmm. It did not fly as a bird flies, but rather it undulated slowly its body along in perfectly synchronized manners. So this gentle pulse of the animal. My house sits about 150 feet from my neighbor's house. Its shape covered the space between the houses. It was quite wide. As it undulated, I could see hanging down from its back or something was something that looked like a tail or maybe a leg or legs held together. I could not be sure as it continued to move as I watched it transfixed. It made no other sound attempts, the initial swoosh, than when I looked up. I think it wanted me to see it. I felt that as I watched it until it disappeared across the farm fields in the back of the neighbor's home. There were no odors or lights associated with my sightings except the stars. At no time did I feel it intended to harm me, and even believed that it disappeared from sight. I felt frozen in amazement. I could not sleep. When I went to bed, even now, I gazed at the stars, still hoping to see it again.
That's nice.
And that's a common sentiment with these guys.
Yeah.
We have dozens and dozens and dozens, probably hundreds of encounters of these. These are one of the more common types. Like I said, large. The sense of awe that's associated with them is really, really impressive. We've talked to plenty of eyewitnesses. We've had a bunch of Australians like come on our show and share encounters with this type.
And send us videos.
And we have a video of one, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And these guys, again, this is all speculation for the most part. We do know there's life up there, according to that NASA study. Yes. They did retrieve life. But these guys would be considered a cryptid.
Yes.
By the definition, there's three different types of cryptids that fall under the cryptid moniker. But these guys, it would be like seeing a Bigfoot or something for the first time or for the only time. You get to see one, it's going to be either scary or just an awe-inspiring thing. That's just what I'd imagine.
I mean, we've had an episode, Robin's encounter. Mm-hmm. The jellyfish tried to eat me.
Yeah.
That was a more scary one.
Right, exactly, yeah.
I think that's the name of the episode, too.
That's the only reason I added that in there. It's either going to be scary or just awe, but 90% of them are all just... wow.
And that's especially with that type. And like the Blue Mountains of Australia, these guys are often associated with mountain ranges. And I mentioned earlier that a lot of times there's storms or huge air pressure fluctuations. Mm-hmm. So we think that these guys are big, gentle gliders. We think that they maybe travel across the country. So California condors, for example, they used to start on the West Coast, fly across the plains. And when they would get to Appalachian Mountains, they would ride up on the thermal vents, get back over and fly back over to that side of the country.
To the west?
Yeah, to the west, and keep doing these big patterns. I think these guys are probably following a similar thing. So basically, when the air is coming across the U.S., once it hits the Appalachians, it creates this big elevator of air straight up. And I think these guys are riding it. So these guys are heavily associated with mountain ranges, whether it's the East Coast, West Coast, Australia, Scandinavia. It's and not always. There's a couple that we've talked about, Louisiana and Florida. They're also associated with water. So the thing, the leg thing hanging off it, it very much sounds like what we call an ovipositor.
So what's that?
So in insects and invertebrates, an ovipositor is an organ that is designed to lay and deposit eggs. So crickets have that. People think it's a stinger, that big long tail.
Yeah.
That's an ovipositor. They actually poke in the ground to lay eggs under the ground.
And that's just the females?
Yes.
Okay.
So that's a good way to sex a cricket if you ever need to do that.
Oh, if you're ever in that situation.
Yeah. It happens. Yeah, life happens.
It's easier than, you know, IDing a sand shiner.
It is. It is much easier than IDing a sand shiner. So these guys, I have a theory, and the next book's going to tackle this, envelop this a lot more, that I think they're still reproducing with water in some way, shape, or form. We've talked about tons and tons of star jelly events and egg spawn events and all this weird stuff.
Kentucky meat shower.
The Kentucky meat shower, the Alaskan egg, you know.
Oh, yeah. When it rained down, yeah. Just was it eggs. Like eggs, like red or orange?
Oh, yellow.
Yellow.
Bright okay. Yellow eggs.
Yeah.
So I think that it was maybe depositing eggs or young or something, or reproducing. It could have been some other sexual organ. Just because we don't see them a lot with these encounters. She was describing it as hanging way down below it. And I feel like if it was a more common thing, it probably is retractable. Not all invertebrates are like crickets. Most of them aren't, where they don't have their, you know, ovipositors or reproductive, you know, they don't have them just hanging out because they can get damaged.
Right, yeah.
So I kind of think that she may have witnessed it and maybe given birth. And when we did this episode with this one, I think it was called Manta Ray Mayhem, was the episode this is from.
Perhaps.
That we looked it up in right behind her house, because I didn't give the full address, but I have a very close neighborhood. There is a pond and a major river. And it seems like that was the direction it was coming from. That first swoosh she heard could have been one big flap just to get it up high enough where it wasn't going to run into the houses or anything like that.
Right. Because, you know, like we speculate with these guys, they're not meant to be down here in our part of the atmosphere.
At least not for long periods of time.
Right. So these ones in particular, and like the bigger they get, probably aren't supposed to be down here. And with those storm systems coming in, they get knocked down and they have a very hard time getting back up. And I think that, you know, that's when people are getting their sightings or their witnesses or, you know. So I'm not, basically I'm saying this thing, yeah, it could have been reproducing. It could have been doing something like that, but it could have been injured, knocked down. And that was its attempt, its last swoosh to get back up or something.
So, and then I want to say something with that, because I agree with you. But then somebody would say, let's say, well, then if they're not designed to be down here, why would they be reproducing down here? So we can look at sea turtles. Okay. Perfectly adapted, perfectly designed, specifically leatherback sea turtles do not leave the water.
No.
Where do they go lay their eggs?
Land.
Yep. They drag their carcasses onto land. And if you ever see sea turtles, especially like loggerheads, some of the bigger species.
They're massive.
They, you know, and leatherbacks are just another whole different thing. It struggles, and a lot of them die just even trying to lay their eggs.
Yeah.
So we, in the book, we do that a lot. And in our episodes, we do this a lot. There's tons and tons of natural comparisons to make to cryptids and other things. You still happy we picked this topic?
Oh, yeah.
You
absolutely.
Picked this topic.
Yeah. I mean, I just think this is a topic that is starting to grow. It's going to grow. And I just think there, it's an important thing to talk about and cover, because there's not enough people. There's nobody out there talking about this stuff.
Yep. So that was the first type. It's probably my favorite type out of all this. It's just because there's a ton and ton and ton of sightings with it. And we have some really, really old sightings, 1600, 1700 sightings of these guys. And I don't know. I think that's the one I want to see.
Oh, that's okay. That's your Bigfoot, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. If you haven't heard, I've seen a Bigfoot. It was last year on the confessionals. We talked to Tony about it. The last time we were down here. All right. Are you ready for the next one?
Absolutely.
Sky squids.
Okay. And these are the fun ones.
These are the weird ones. They get weird. I mean,
absolutely.
We get to throwing up clouds later and everything like that. So give me your definition. What do sky squids look like at you?
So the sky squids, I mean, they follow
this
the body.
This is a rarer type. This is a rarer type.
And we think they follow the body plan of the squid, you know, with the tentacles and the two longer appendages. I don't know if they're tentacles or not. I'm sure they got a different name that you would correct me on.
I'm sure. I mean,
okay. But anyways, I think these are those, they're gigantic. They're very long, very tall. And the Russians had them on video camera, the sky angels. Yes.
I didn't put, that one's in the book, but I think that's either in this book or the second book.
That's the image in my head I get when I think of.
I picked a different Russian squid for the encounter.
Oh, all right. So Russians, they got a lot of sky squids, huh?
Well, it's a massive country.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Like, it's the quarter of the Northern Hemisphere.
That's true. Fair enough.
I mean, but very right. The one I always compare to is blanket octopus.
There you go. Okay.
Because it has two arms, or, you know, so it's a different tentacle and arms, but it doesn't really matter for anybody at home. They have two arms that unfurl these massive capes. And blanket octopus are just absolutely famous for mimicking everything.
Mm-hmm.
They'll look like sea turtles. They'll look like people swimming. There's several accounts of people drowning, trying to save a person that ended up being a blanket octopus out in the open ocean because they mimic the human shape.
Yeah.
So you look down the deep and you see what looks like a person down there. So you dive to try to save them. You drown and it turns into an octopus and it's like, whatever. These sky squids seem to have a very similar shape to these ocean blanket octopus. In the form, they're very pliable and they change shape rapidly, but they do have a couple forms they seem to favor. The first one is this triangular shape, which resembles a kite without the streamers. A kite without the streamers. The second one is very octopodal in shape. So octopus, you know, squid. We talk about the mantle with several tentacles or arms behind it.
Mm-hmm.
By this, I mean it's classical, you know, squid shape, the long tube head, the tentacles below the head. The final form commonly seen is this kite with what appears to be two flowing long arms or tails. So this would be like the blanket octopus. And if you guys at home never seen a blanket octopus, I don't know if I can put one above my head, but I highly suggest you Google it.
Not about that head, not about the corn head.
I mean, it's the hat of knowledge. It's the hat of knowledge.
I'll take it. I'll accept that.
Made me laugh.
Mm-hmm.
In the form, they often are seen in pairs, indicating this may be a breeding display. So a lot of these encounters with these big blankets seem to be one or two or more animals. So at least, you know, these two. So that kind of indicates that it may be either a territorial display, a breeding display. It's a social display, at least in some way, shape, or form. In this form, they are often seen, like I said, in pairs. Their flight abilities are particular, similar to like manta rays. They seem to use what appears to be a swim bladder-like organ to maintain altitude, using their fins to steer. They also seem to be able to furl their fins and tails to become ovoid in shape to gain speed when necessary.
Ooh.
So these tentacles in these big blankets that they deploy, they look like they can pull them in, and we've actually have some witnesses of that from commercial jetline pilots see these guys a lot, where they'll pull in their bodies and become more just a big ovoid.
Like a big tube.
Yeah, basically. Just a big tube of meat, and they'll go flying. What?
This is a big tube of meat.
A big tube of meat. We kind of theorize that these guys is possible niche in the upper atmosphere of the food chain, maybe a medium-level predator. We'll talk about some of the maybe apex predators later. Their bodies in the witness are twofold. First, their bodies are like the tubular shape with the tentacles structure hanging off. These guys are often transparent or mostly transparent. Other witnesses accidentally see them due to their camouflage trailer. The most common type isn't on full display. Their large, flat, kite-like bodies, the two long tentacle structures trailing behind them. They're most often two creatures, like I said. So yeah, what do you think about these guys?
When we did the research for the book and pulling some of the accounts out of the Library of Congress, there were some amazing accounts, but some of the videos that are very just odd.
They're weird to look at.
They're very weird to look at. And the best way to describe what this thing could be is this right here, this description right here. I mean, just because it checks most of the boxes of what you're seeing on film. It's nuts. These things are huge and weird.
So the encounter we're going to use is from Belarus.
Oh, okay.
So this is called the Belarusian sky squids.
Nice.
And that's from the book.
Welcome
Whether you're diving deep into an eerie confession or winding down after a long day, great sleep sets the stage for everything. That's why Ghost Bed is the go-to mattress for those who value comfort, quality, and recovery. For over 20 years, Ghost Bed has crafted mattresses that cater to every kind of sleeper, back, side, and somewhere in between. Ghost Bed has you covered. We highly recommend the Ghost Bed Lux. It's perfect for hot sleepers thanks to the advanced cooling technology. And for those who need the perfect blend of support and softness, the Ghost Bed Flex combines memory foam and coils to deliver just that. This holiday season, give the gift of better sleep to yourself or someone you care about with Ghost Bed's easy mattress quiz, fast free shipping, and 101 night sleep trial. Finding the perfect mattress has never been easier or more rewarding. And here's something to keep you curious. The Confessionals listeners get an exclusive deal, 50% off site-wide. Visit ghostbed.com/Tony and use code Tony at checkout to claim your discount. Don't let restless nights keep you up this holiday season. Upgrade Ghost Bed today and experience sleep that's as unforgettable as your favorite confessions. Head to ghostbed.com/Tony and use code Tony to unlock your exclusive 50% off deal.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.
Several unnamed air pilots, and I believe they did give their names, but we didn't put any names in the book.
Mm-hmm.
You can Google and find this stuff if you really want to. 1985 and 1999 were the encounters. In 1985, a pilot encountered, or en route to Tallinn, witnessed a cigar-shaped UFO with trailing tentacles flying overhead. So he's in the cockpit
mm-hmm.
and watching a UFO with tentacles going over top of him.
Mm.
The pilot aboard the craft said the creature was blue and red in color, brighter than the clouds around it, with a very smooth asymmetrical body that was slightly transparent in the moving in and out of the northern or northwesterly direction, climbing to the upper atmosphere. Both pilots in the cockpit claimed that the craft had a slight glow or phosphorescence to it. The object made no noise and was moving at incredible speed until it vanished at very, very high altitudes.
Mm.
So like I said, these guys, most of these commercial airline pilots don't ever leave the troposphere. They don't ever leave our layer. So this thing was seen buzzing overhead really fast at an upward angle as it was disappearing into the upper layers.
Hmm.
In 1999, a very similar creature was seen by two pilots flying in the same route, almost matching the exact description of the first creature. When later shown pictures, they said it looked like a gigantic glass squid. And we'll talk about that animal in a minute. This creature again had a blue and red light that was slightly transparent body, which was higher and higher into the atmosphere. Pilots said that there was no aircraft that could go that high in the object or the creature during the time, while the appearance and the altitude were both noted with this very strange sighting. So, the glass squid, they have a humongous head or mantle. So, their eyes and stuff is right at the body section, but they have a humongous mantle, almost no fins. It's pretty transparent. They have tiny little tentacles and big eyes right at the base.
Oh, okay.
And why they're called glass squids is because they're mostly transparent.
Mm-hmm.
Besides their eyes, and they're actually, this whole big mantle has almost no organs in it, and they keep their organs right by their eyes.
Oh, wow.
So you can have a big body and not be showing off. So when the pilots were kind of going through and researching and trying to find animals or anything that kind of looked similar, this is one that really stuck out to them, that looked very, very similar to a glass squid.
Interesting.
Imagine seeing a glass squid going like Mach 10.
Right, past you flying the airplane.
Looking out, like, well, that was weird. I shouldn't look up. There's bright lights in here.
I think we better land this thing.
All right. But yeah, I mean, that's the sky squids. They're a much more rare encounter.
But you were saying something about lights? They were seeing lights on it?
Yeah, they had spots of bioluminescent.
Okay.
Or they said phosphorescence because they thought it was like, they didn't know it was flares. They didn't.
Well, you weren't close enough to see.
Yeah.
They're in an airplane.
It's moving, you know, Mach 10.
Right, yeah.
Or whatever. They said it was moving incredible speeds.
It's just, squid have bioluminescence like that.
100%.
What's the right word? Is that right?
Bioluminescence, yes.
Okay. They have that, you know, and if these creatures are alive in our atmosphere and you see those blinking lights in the sky that are hard to explain, that don't look like an airplane light, doesn't necessarily already have to be, or automatically have to be a UFO, a craft. It could be just a creature because it already exists in the ocean. They're already doing this. If you look down in the water and you see you doing the same exact thing. I just feel like it's not too far of a stretch to make that association with some of the lights we see in the sky.
I want to say again, I want to make it very clear that when we say squid and manta ray, we are not saying actual squid manta ray. We are using the rough body plan of those sea animals. So when we say sky squid, I do not think they're related to squid.
Right.
I think it's convergent evolution, which is the phenomena where two separate unrelated animals will fit to the same rough body plan to do roughly the same niche, which is the job of the environment. So like I said, these guys are probably medium-level predators like squid in the ocean, even though they're incredibly fast. Next one. Now here's a fun word, and you can explain to everybody what it means.
Oh, good.
The sky cyanophores.
Oh, okay.
AKA the sky snakes.
Yeah. So now, is that how you say that word? Cyanophore? Siphonophore? I don't know.
Now listen.
Weird looking word.
I've heard it pronounced by biologists.
Yes.
That study these guys different ways.
So we're going to go with cyanophore.
I go with cyanophore. I've heard siphonophores. I've heard all kinds of different ways to pronounce it by biologists that work with these animals.
And what these are is they're a colonial organism. It's multiple tiny little things linking together to make one big thing. And each, they can link together and do separate like body parts, basically. So the best example is the man-o-war jellyfish. Not a jellyfish. I was taught that on this show. It's not a jellyfish. It's one of these things. Cyanophores. That's the word we're using. It's multiple small.
Tens of thousands of little animals.
Creating the body plan of the jellyfish. Hands,
essentially.
Creating the mantle, creating the tentacles. But they're just little things.
And that's a more common one. Like you said, it looks very jellyfish-esque. Mm-hmm. There are some cyanophores in the deep ocean that look straight up alien. They have giant hanging organs and balloons and dragging. And they look like several different animals flying a kite, which is another animal.
Yeah.
And they have organs, like they have special animals that just do the digesting.
Mm-hmm.
They have all animal members of the colony that just do the digesting. So when we talk about sky cyanophores, aka sky snakes, we are looking at these guys, and I'm not talking about rods. I want to make that very clear. I don't have rods in this book. That their biology can be very confusing. So this group can have very confusing biology to look at with eyes in their mouths, multiple undulating pairs of fins and what looks like hair, partially transparent bodies, and very, very hard to define heads. By that, I mean, it's very hard to look at these animals and go, that's the head. That's, you know, because what we're talking about with cyanophores, these ocean animals, that their biology is just so alien. These are probably the group of animals that is the closest to an actual alien would look like. Just because it's hard to look at it and be like, well, there's a mouth, there's eyes, because they have very different things. So this group, superficially appearance, or, you know, to these animals to match Earth's group of animals called cyanophores. These amazing animals can have a very worm-like appearance with a segmented body styles and very similar to some worms. Cyanophores are colonial species, which means they have mass bodies that are built up of thousands of individuals and are extremely specialized. That means some animals act as fins, some aid or do digestion, and others steer the body. This group of animals can look just about anything, but some of these animals we actually have in the ocean, some examples of cyanophores, look almost just like our sky snakes. As far as sky cyanophores go, they have seen almost swimming through the sky with multiple pairs of furry fins. Their ability to fly in locomotion is likely due to segmented bodies having gas-filled sacs in each of the segments, using their quick-moving fins to steer and do incredible gains of speed. basically they're negatively buoyant or neutrally buoyant mm-hmm. in this air, and they use these thousands of these pairs of fins just to get up speed. They've been observed being well over 200 feet long, often being very close to the ground, seem to be in poor health condition. So when you see these guys close to the ground, they almost always die after.
Yeah.
Like everybody's like, yeah, they crashed and they're dead.
Actively dying.
Yeah. They've been witnessed to turn fast and go extremely quick on a dime, not dismissing the open. Or so we kind of think these are the sharks. When we talk about the biology of their upper atmosphere, we kind of think that these guys are maybe the apex predators. Some of them have what appears to be massive jaws, massive size.
Like a bobbit worm, right?
Yeah. So the one I picked is probably the most famous individual of this for the encounter is the Crawfordsville Monster.
Mm.
Which if you guys at home have never heard of the Crawfordsville Monster, so weird having a camera. If you guys at home have never heard of the Crawfordsville Monster, just look up art because none of it's right. I don't think it's anybody's fault. It's just because it happened a long time ago in 1891. And the description is very, very hard.
Mm-hmm.
So every artist takes a different interpretation of it.
Their own artistic license.
Because it's a weird thing. So Crawfordsville Journal reported that two ice delivery drivers cited a strange phenomenon that hovered in the air above their location, described as a horrible apparition that filled them with dread and terror. A similar sighting was reported by the Methodist pastor and his wife. The Crawfordsville Journal described it as being 18 feet long, 8 feet wide, moving rapidly through the air by means of several pair of side fins. It is pure white and has no defined shape or form. So keep in mind what we just talked about with Santa Force. No defined shape or form.
Mm-hmm.
So that means every time it's moving, it's changing its rough body plan. Or it's, you know, it's what you're looking at. There was no tail or head visible, but it was seen to have a great flaming eye. And it had a sort of wheezing, plaintive sound emanating from what appeared to be a mouth, which was near invisible. So it was sounded like it was hurt or wheezing. A lot of the people, and when we looked into it and we talked about it, you know, we found several eyewitness reports saying it just seemed like it was not doing well.
Mm-hmm.
It flapped like the flags in the wind and came out quickly and frequently, giving great spasms through its suffering and undeniable agony. According to an interview conducted later in that year by the Crawfordsville reporter, Vincent Gabbis, hundreds of residents observed the phenomena in the following evening, with some claiming that they could feel the monster's hot breath as it swooped down over them. Now, it wasn't trying to attack anybody, but it was slowly losing altitude. When it was first seen, it was like 200 feet and slowly losing. It was basically then sighted. The Methodist pastor said it died in a field. It crashed and everybody was too scared to get close to it because it was still writhing. And they assumed it died. When they went out the next day, you could find the struggles of it and just like nothing really to it. So when cyanophores, jellyfish, and even salamanders, when they die, they rot immediately.
Extremely fast. I mean, for example, that one time we were recording our podcast in our very first studio and you had a pet.
I had an axolotl pass away
when we went out for lunch. We came back, it was nearly completely gone in a little tank by itself.
Very old axolotl.
Oh, yeah.
But
it was just crazy how quickly they
salamanders just dissolve.
Yeah, dissolve literally into nothing. It fast.
Yep. But yeah, so that is the cyanophores.
Yeah, those are interesting ones.
We've had a ton of, like, Dubai has a bunch of these guys. The southern U.S. has a bunch of these guys.
These same ones in India, too, right?
Yeah.
By the airport?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's in the book. There's tons. A lot of times they're seen very colorful, very, very animated, and very fast.
Ooh, hopefully not colorful like a rainbow serpent.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Here
Rain
we go.
Blood.
Yeah, no thanks.
All right, next one.
They're worshiping these sky creatures.
Yeah, I wouldn't feed it. It will eat you.
That's what the pyramids are. They're altars for these guys to land.
I think that's the only group. Oh, this one and the next one probably will eat you. The atmospheric amoebas.
Okay.
So go ahead and tell us what an atmospheric amoeba is.
I feel like these ones are similar to the manta rays, but they're their own thing. Basically big blobs. But I've seen these things, big, giant, translucent blobs that just seem to move slowly through the atmosphere. But I've even remember back when I was like a kid or growing up, seeing on TV like these infrared cameras shooting out into space, picking up creatures. Now, when I look back at it through this lens, this is like 100% what I think that they were catching. And I can't find those videos anymore. I just remember being a kid seeing this stuff and just like, what is this weird? This is weird.
And we think these are, well, I would say the living clouds.
Okay, there you go.
So these are seen, like you said, the big blobs flying through the amoeba shaped, also living clouds. Where they seem to be an animal or something hiding inside of a cloud, whether we think that they make their cloak, whether it's a mucus, like, you know, that they looks very cloud-like, or they're producing a vapor of some kind. But yeah.
Right.
So this group is something that we know little about. The second, hopefully they explore more deeply. These creatures are described as floating amorphous blobs or the living cloud type. We kind of lump these together. These creatures are often huge with no clear definitive shape. Often mistaken for low-hanging fogs or clouds. They do not appear to be carnivorous. They do appear to be carnivorous, while the raining blood events and raining bone events attribute to these creatures' appetites.
Raining blood.
Which we're going to talk about the raining bones here in a minute. We think they may be much more like scavenger-oriented and probably only prey upon creatures that are too slow to move out of the way. Like we did the evil fogs, the living fogs around the world that seem to dissolve things like a big amoeba. But you got to not move. Like,
right, yeah.
You can't get away from them. They're very slow. It'd be like not escaping from a sloth. Some of these places in the world have long-term histories with these living fogs, often warning people to avoid them. One of the first appear was create layers of vapor around the body to help break up their shape to avoid predation from other species in the upper atmosphere. We see this a lot. Another thought we have of these creatures, they might be tightly packed schools of small atmospheric creatures. So they may act like piranha, or like we don't even talk about Santa Force, where, and we, when we do live shows and stuff like that, we showed videos of what appeared to be a cloud that was more solid, that almost had like little silver fish in it.
Inside of it, yeah.
And that may be what these things are. So they're operating as one big body, like sea fleas are a huge one, that they are more dramatic than piranha ever were for their reputation.
Oh, really?
You ever seen them?
I don't think so.
You can put like a dead fish on the beach.
Oh, the little guys on the beach.
Yeah.
They dig a scoop up and they come flying out and they
Sand fleas.
Okay. What'd you say?
Sea fleas.
Okay.
These will, like, they'll eat you if you hold still.
Okay.
But they're just like little piranha. I mean, they're like that big. They're just hyper little piranha.
And just living in the ocean?
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, so that's that type. So the encounter we have is the Raining Bones event from Corral Parish, Louisiana, 1872. A ton of local residents. This is one of our Library of Congress ones we found. The article is from the Nashville Union American of July 11th, 1872, Tennessee. They had the following bizarre occurrence. If the first statement of these residents of Louisiana are to be credited, Dame Nature was recently being played strange pranks on that part of the country. As the writer of the New York Journal of Commerce, who versatile in good standing and the voucher by the editor of the paper, gives the following particulars of the strange phenomenon that occurred in Corral Parish last month. Once again, this was written in 1872. So language, a little different. We've changed our language a little bit.
In the past 150 years, yes, I'd say so.
And I'm not going to read it word for word. I'm just going to kind of tell you what happened. Basically, during in between severe floods, there was a thunderstorm that occurred over this parish in Louisiana. There was a drought. So when the water receded, a bunch of animals got stranded, like fish and stuff like that. So during the next bit of rain, the town noticed this heavy, thick black cloud. It was hanging only like 100 feet above the town. So there's big clouds up way up in the sky. And then there's big fat one hanging low. It was weird enough. People started taking notice of it and looking up at it. Then all of a sudden in the front of the cloud, it started raining thousands and tens of thousands of bones out of it. And it was freaking out people. And then once it stopped raining bones, it floated back up and joined the rest of the clouds. So a bunch of people took the bones. It appeared to almost be entirely alligator gar scales.
It was crazy.
Which alligator gar scales, anybody don't know, they're armor-plated fish.
Mm-hmm.
They're ancient and their scales are super, super dense. So what we think happened was, like I said, that when the waters receded, gar got stranded. I think this thing scavenged, ate so many dead gar, or rotting gar. It could not get back up into the atmosphere, digested what it could, and threw up what it couldn't. So we look at animals, all kinds of animals. Owls are a big one. That'll do it. They would throw up owl pellets.
Pellets, yep.
And that's what I think was happening here.
Oh, so this is the owl pellet version of the sky creatures.
Yep. Well, yeah, what do you think of that one?
Now, that one's a crazy one. And ain't it nuts going back to the 1800s? We even had some stories going back to the 1700s of just examples of things like that. I mean, this is the raining bones one, but we had one that's rained blood on, and they covered that in the movie Nope. Yep. Like the examples of stuff like this. And we speculate there was some soft disclosure in that movie. Absolutely.
And I want to be clear. We had our first episode out about this subject before the trailer for Nope even dropped.
Yes, you can check the date on our website. I forget.
I just got mad because somebody a long time ago said that we just ripped it off of Nope. And I'm like, look at the dates.
Yes.
Look at the dates.
We were there before Nope. And we didn't need government consultation to do this.
Nope.
Whereas Nope did. You can check it in the credits of the movie.
It's there.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
All right. I think this may be our last one. There's many other types.
Oh, but yeah. We're just touching on a few examples for this. But again, this is just an intro to this subject.
We've done dozens, if not 20 hours on this mm-hmm. subject.
I mean, and the book is loaded with examples that you've found since, like I said, the 1700s.
We've had turned into us. And
yes, listener submissions and again, the book covers it all, and it's an easy read, too.
And if you've seen a living UFO, you can turn your report in to cryptidsofthecornpodcast@gmail.com or livingufo@gmail.com. Please and thank you. Just, I got to look at the camera and talk every once in a while.
I forgot about that other email.
Yeah, it's brand new.
Yeah.
Hopefully I said it right.
I forgot all about it existed.
The Cryptids of Corn one works.
Yeah.
So the jellyfish.
Okay.
But what do you know about the jellyfish?
Well, I guess not a whole lot. I know the closest thing we can compare it to, or we seen that video recently of that UFO flying over, what was that, an airport or something?
There was the one in Afghanistan, and then there was the one over the US Mexican border.
I think it was the Afghanistan one was the big one going around, right? And almost, if everyone knows what I'm talking about, but it's a certain video that looks like the jellyfish shape. It's got the bulbous, weird, deformed looking top, almost like a deflated jellyfish, but it's got these things hanging down that look
like tentacles. This looks like a big jellyfish. A metallic jellyfish.
Right.
Which animals can 100% be metallic. We cover that a lot with how animals deal with open environments. Mm-hmm. And metallic camouflage actually works in open environments. You look invisible.
Well, I mean, just using the sea or the ocean for an example.
Lancefish,
barracudas.
Hornfish.
There are so many fish.
Name a silverfish. Lancefish are the ones that literally look like liquid mercury, though.
Mm.
Like they just, they're the shiniest of the shiny. A group of jellyfish, giants. This group is completely identical pretty much to the ocean counterparts. They look almost exactly like oceanic jellyfish.
Mm-hmm.
Besides a couple of them having more balloon-like heads or mantles or bells in jellyfish, it's called a bell. But so they seem to have a little bit more volume, but probably not mass when it comes to these body parts. This creature has been witnessed to be imaginable in size. When we talk about some of the encounters with them being 400 or 500 feet wide, 700, 800, 900 feet long, the people that really describe some of the really, really big ones say how absolutely monstrous they are in size. They've been witnessed to have firsthand accounts compared to them watching a blimp with LEDs flash very complex patterns of white, blue, red, green, and even yellow lights. They resemble actual jellyfish, so it's uncanny that it leads to be related to them in the first place. These actually may be related to the jellyfish. Like we said, there is a jellyfish cousin that we have documented in the upper atmosphere.
Absolutely.
This is the one that may actually be a jellyfish, maybe a hyper-evolved or hyper-specialized jellyfish. In some of the more recent upper atmosphere studies, like I said, they've found small jellyfish cousins. Jellyfish family has greater possibilities of being functional. In behaviors, they've also been seen drifting very slowly and gently pulsing with their bells. Their ability to stay airborne is likely due, like we've already said, with large center chambers with a gas filled to maintain altitude and pulsing to steer. Some of these have been witnessed to be capable of great burst of speed in short distances.
Okay.
So almost like a squid or even a jellyfish shooting once.
Right.
Really hard. So, yeah, like They seem to be prey. A lot of times, these just look like giant filter feeders in the upper atmosphere. When they die or they get eaten, I think things kill them and they fall apart. And we talk about star jelly events and all this stuff. I think these are the big bodied ones that are just massive. Mm. And I think there's a chance these actually act like coral reefs up there, where they are so big and massive that they actually act as their own structural environment to smaller species.
Oh, wow. I mean, I can't rule it out.
We see it with jellyfish in the ocean.
Yeah.
Lion's mane jellyfish house hundreds of small fish around them. Even sea turtles and crabs and all kinds of stuff will hang on to the bodies of one lion's mane jellyfish because it's the only thing in the open ocean. So a lot of times these guys are seen pretty much just in the northern hemisphere, as far as I have found in reports, not near the equator. They are mostly colder climates. Now I'm going to try to say this right. The Qizhen jellyfish is the encounter we're going to go over. And this is the Chinese Air Force fight with one.
Okay.
You remember this one?
I do, yes.
And I
remember by the name.
Qizhen?
Yeah.
I think it is China. It's October 19th, 1998. The encounter in 1998, four military radar stations. Now, I'm going to mispronounce everything.
Right. Why?
Because I cannot read.
There you go.
I have some mental problems.
That's fair enough. Handicaps.
Yes. Hedi Province, China, reported the presence of an unidentified object hovering slowly over a military flight training school. So these radar stations pick up this massive, massive object hovering over a military, like a flight training school. So in this story has some different, facts or versions. So it's kind of hard to really pinpoint. But a big one says that it determined the object was not military, civilian aircraft. Colonel Lee, who was the base commander, ordered six fighter jets to intercept the object. At least 140 ground personnel witnessed the object hovering over the base. Many observers of the base said the UFO appeared to be some kind of small star when they were describing it.
Wow.
It would grow larger and larger. And when it wasn't, when it was decreasing altitude, it would shrink and shrink and shrink. Like it was expanding itself to go up and shrinking to go down.
Okay.
As the object got closer, it appeared to be very, very jellyfish-like in structure, with the bottom having long hanging tentacles. They were covered in bright lights.
Hmm.
So all these tentacles supposedly had a light at the bottom. The crew of six fighter jets intercepted the object, radioing back that the tower, whatever it was straight out of a science fiction novel, claiming that it was some kind of jellyfish monster. As they got closer, about 4,000 meters above or from the object, it abruptly shot up, completely avoiding the interception of the fighter jets. So we're talking incredibly fast. So this thing was going
techniques.
Very, very slow and then instantly shot up really quick. The pilots followed the creature for roughly 40,000 feet.
Oh, wow.
Basically, it kept going. And every time they get close and close, it would shoot out of the way. A lot of the pilots said it felt like it was playing with them. Like it was some kind of game to the creature.
Like playing tag.
Yeah. Basically, the only reason they went back to base is they were running low on fuel after, playing with this thing for a whole time. The whole time of the engagement, the pilots felt the creature was playing with them, and if it wanted to, could easily escape. The only reason it was still intercepting them was they think that it was either enjoying it or that it wanted to stay in the area.
Right.
Or they said it was moving so quick when it wanted to move that there's no reason it couldn't get away from us.
Mm-hmm.
These are fighter jets. I mean, it's a crazy story.
Yeah, they're pretty fast, ain't they?
Yeah, tend to be. So what do you think of those ones?
Wild. That one in particular didn't talk too much about the lights, but I really wanted to touch on the lights when it comes to the sky jellyfish because, you see videos and I'm sure eyewitnesses and stuff see basically LED flashing lights in the sky. And in my mind, at least before doing this, it's got to be like a machine. It's got to be something like that. But then I discovered cone jellies. That's when you showed me the cone jelly.
If you guys at home have never looked up a video of a cone jelly, they just are little barrels that have what appears to be LED light strips and can do the most complex, crazy patterns. They look like little UFOs.
Yes.
They look like UFOs.
They're little black squid in the bottom of the ocean that, yes, look exactly like UFOs. And they change their shapes, look like all crazy shapes, but it's the light. It literally looks like an LED light strip.
And like you said, with the shape thing, they'll morph into what appears to be like two halves of like concave circles.
Yeah.
And they'll turn back into the barrel shape. And
like a TIE jellyfish. Fighter from Star Wars.
They look like that. They look like a TIE fighter. So imagine if you had the ability, gelatinous creatures can have structure. They can move pretty quick. Jellyfish, we know very little about. The oldest group of organisms on the planet that are still around, complex organisms. They have no brain. They can operate mazes. They have, depending on what species in the ocean, 26 eyes. So it's very weird that they process information in some way without a centralized nerve bundle, a brain. But they are able to interpret their environment. They're able to hunt. There even seems to be not, I wouldn't say social behaviors, but they do seem to know, like they have species of fish that live inside their bells, depending on what species of jellyfish. They know not to eat their resident fish for two reasons. One, it cleans them of parasites. And two, it lures in predatory fish that they can eat. How does an animal even think about that without having a brain?
Right.
You know, so we're talking about fundamental understanding of science is very limited when it comes to these species. Remember, everybody at home, science does not know everything. We know plenty of high-level scientists that will tell you that. We've had plenty come on our show that'll tell you that science does not know everything. It's a learning process. It should still always be a learning process.
Right. So when someone says, I am the science, probably don't want to listen to that guy.
But this is thing. I mean, what do you think about the organic UFO thing as a whole?
I just think there's a lot of potential there for it. And, you know, I 100% believe just with the evidence that we have found life up there and, you know, it mimics the ocean so much. I feel strongly that there has to be some of these creatures are alive up there because it explains some of the weird accounts throughout history, like the Kentucky meat shower, for example. But even beyond that, I even start thinking now, what if these cry creatures are beyond just our atmosphere or our biology here in our atmosphere? What if it is like crosses over into this Bigfoot, you know, cryptid stuff where it's interdimensional things? Because if we got interdimensionals here on land, underwater, as we speculate, absolutely they would be up in the sky too. Why wouldn't they be?
100%. I mean,
and then, you know, and that gets into the, with the Vietnam soldiers with the infrared light or the night vision, the red night vision goggles. What were they seeing?
So explain that. Talk about that.
Okay. Well, I don't know it.
Do you mean to do
that
it?
Well, but I just know, when was it? Was it Vietnam War?
Vietnam.
But they first
attack
issued
helicopters.
First issued their night vision goggles were in a red hue. Now they're in green. But why are they in green now? Why make the switch? Oh, it's because in the red spectrum, they were seeing quote unquote demons flying around the sky and they were shooting at them. I don't know if they were hitting them or if they were killing.
Yeah, they were saying they were shredding them.
Okay, shredding.
So these attack pilots, these attack helicopter pilots in Vietnam were wearing these so they could fly without lights and that kind of stuff, you know, in Vietnam. And groups of attack helicopters would start shooting at the same target in the sky, saying that it was a massive demon or something like that. Really quickly after the U.S. government switched to green for reasons.
And they stopped seeing the demons.
Everybody stopped seeing the demons. But we've had several Vietnam soldiers, you know, on our Patreon come on and talk about when they had the red, they told you to never look at the sky.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you're on the ground using the red, they were very clear. You do not look at the sky with these things.
And what is that? I mean, I think that it might be these living UFOs.
I believe it.
And then that opens a whole other box of, or Pandora's box, I would think, like conservation when it comes to that side of it. Because, you know, the air travel industry is huge.
Oh, gosh. And then
it's also crumbling and the infrastructure is horrible because they're greedy.
The single largest environment that directly affects every person on the planet that I do believe has these big organisms in it, that countries in the Middle East and stuff like that are already actively mining for resources.
Like you mentioned the aeroplankton earlier.
They're actively melting down aeroplankton for fuel sources.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
with an environment we know
nothing about. So how is that affecting the other biomes around it? Because we know the ocean affects us.
And this is the bigger ocean.
This is the bigger ocean.
It has more water by volume, tenfold.
So, you know, if a train, you know, derails full of chemicals, you know, probably not best to just light it all on fire and send it right up into the atmosphere.
I don't know. It wouldn't have been wicked to see one of these things just come crashing down like a big manta ray. Like, oh.
Well, that would have been yes, I guess it would have been. That would have been a weird silver lining, I guess.
I don't know. I mean, they're talking about the East Palestine train crash in Ohio.
Yes, that's what I was referring to. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure once they've seen that plume coming up, these things are probably smart enough Yeah, I'm going to avoid that. We're going up again.
They're drifters. If, well, a lot of these big ones are drifters. They may not even have the ability to move that fast out of the way.
And to be honest, maybe the, this chemicals probably didn't get up high enough to where...
It would take a lot. It would take, they probably came back down, leaving the troposphere.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's some of the other stuff you've learned about this, like doing it? I always forget because I talk so much about it.
Well, yeah, I know. And I kind of forget how long we've been talking about it too. And it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. There's more and more and more. I think that's been the most fascinating thing is, and we didn't even touch into the paranormal side of this stuff. We didn't even touch on the funguses or the mushrooms.
No, and I mean, there's a whole bunch. I mean, there's a whole bunch more.
It's, yeah. And it's just the UFO topic really broadened for me after this. And it, but it helped paint a bigger picture of what's really going on. Because I don't know what's going on.
Nobody does.
Nobody knows. And
we're making educated guesses.
Mm-hmm.
And they're probably wrong.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, absolutely.
Nobody, there's no such thing as an expert anything paranormal. If anybody ever says they are, don't believe them.
Correct. But there are things in the world that you can touch, you can measure, like biological things that we can put our finger on. And you know, just taking the things that do that here, on land and the sea that we know about and applying it to the atmosphere, it's not that far of a jump.
I mean, that's what we do with all kinds. So everybody don't know, if you don't remember from last year, I was a fisheries technician, fisheries crew leader, which is essentially a field biologist. So they always say biologist because it's just easiest for people to understand what I did. Mostly worked with fish, but I did work with salamanders, amphibians, environmental conservation, habitat assessment, and that kind of stuff, fishery surveys. And that's what we do with nature. When we are trying to study a species, we either study the closest living relatives or the closest known relatives or the closest analog species.
Mm-hmm.
So that I mean the closest species that's still doing the same niche as an extinct species or a little known species in another country. You find the niche somewhere else and you look at it and you can kind of make a lot of educated guesses off of what that animal is doing because nature loves a working plan. If it's that works one place, they're going to use it somewhere else. Sharks and dolphins are a great example. They are not closely related, fish and mammals. But if you just look at the fundamental fin array, it's twisted like the tail fluke and the tail fin of the shark is different than a fluke of a dolphin. But roughly, they're very, very similar body plans, very similar shapes, you know, all this stuff. So we look at that with this subject when you kind of compare and then we make educated guesses off of that.
Speculative biology. So, yes, you can find the book Living UFOs, The Ocean Above Our Heads, a study of atmospheric biology on cryptidsofthecorn.com under the books tab.
Yeah, and if you guys like this kind of stuff, you know, we didn't give as big an intro because you're probably sick of hearing from us after we've been blessed to be on Tony's show several times.
Absolutely.
But we do a lot of this where we do the scientific and magical thinking combined, where we just bring a lot of science to the paranormal where... Like, we talked about everything. We had the bad physics episode, which everybody loved.
Yeah.
Just explaining just some physics stuff that matched the paranormal. There are physics going on, like physics experiments going on right now, that if you just change the wording, is magic, is the paranormal. So we do a lot of that. You can check that out. I just want to say one more thing. Boy, wrap it up. I guess two more things. The UAP hearing said living craft 220 times in 212 pages. I felt validated, but I feel like they're going to use one of my creatures to get the UFO community, like to stop the UFO community. And then the second thing, just a huge thank you to Tony and the Confessionals family for allowing us to do this. They continued just the support that they've given us over the years. It really is amazing. It's a blessing. So thank you, Tony. I hope you are enjoying your well-deserved vacation with your family, your break. What do you got? Anything?
I'm with you 100%. Yeah, thank you so much. Very appreciative.
All right, ready?
Yep.
Bye. Subconscious looming over my thoughts, consuming, playing with death like I'm spooning. Everything I'm chasing, eluding me. This prison awaits. I can't find escape, cause I wanna taste the change. Am I left with a bone? Oh, I want.
worth a squeeze. I'm left with a ball.
Yeah. Don't wanna know what the definition of a sorry is. Everything I'm chasing out of reach like Shatari ships. I feel when people say they feel me, they just say they do. Tentacles of praise turning into calamari soup. A little stretch every song I bleed. Just a little recognition is all I need. And God, I'm feeling growth, but every time I look inside, I'm looking at the branches of a bonsai tree. And I don't know what I'ma leave when I leave here, cause the mic's just become a pair of sheep shears. And I'm fighting for change, but legacy's important too. Scrambling for more days, more leap years. Feeling like a mega block around some Lego. In a chamber of my own thoughts, my own echoes. Lows never seem to hit the falsetto.
Is it wrong for me to judge myself on what I've done? Know where I'm going, yeah. Is it wrong for me to see what I'm going to be and where I'm going, yeah. Is it just worth a squeeze? So am I left with a ball?
Cars today are built to last, but how they look is up to you, and that's where Maaco comes in. They specialize in cosmetic repairs. Let's say it's affordable paint jobs to fixing those annoying dents and dings. Maybe your car's paint is faded, or you've been meaning to fix that scrape from the grocery store parking lot. Whatever it is, Maaco has you covered. Now, here's the best part. Stop by your local Maaco, free estimate, and you're going to find out how easy it is to refresh your ride. With more Americans keeping their cars longer, now's the time to protect your investment and keep it looking sharp for years. And you can do so with the great folks at Maaco. At Maaco, they are proud to be a trusted partner for drivers across the country. Whether it's a fresh coat of paint for your car or fixing up everyday dents and dings, Maaco is here to keep your car looking its best. Get started. Visit your local Maaco today. Get the free estimate and see how easy it is to bring new life to your ride. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
Since 1983, Nissan has been building award-winning vehicles right here in America, so there's no need to cross the pond, the river, or even your neighbor's driveway to find real quality. And this summer, Nissan is making it easier than ever to upgrade your ride. No new tariffs, just lower MSRPs on the best-selling Rogue and Pathfinder. So you can finally wave goodbye to that old car with the mysterious dashboard rattle and the tape holding that bumper together. Whether you're craving advanced tech that feels like the future, serious comfort for those long drives, or the peace of mind that comes with driving something that doesn't squeak every time you turn left, these SUVs have you covered. But don't snooze on this. These offers are only here for a limited time and while supplies last. It's just one more reason why Nissan is ranked number one for the new vehicle quality among mainstream brands. If you've been waiting for the right moment, consider this your opportunity and head over to your local Nissan dealer before these offers disappear. Learn more and find your new Nissan at NissanUSA.com. For J.D. Power 2025 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
I bet you've probably been to the doctor's office in the past few months. I bet you had to hand over personal info, like your insurance, your ID, maybe even your social security number. And I bet you weren't thinking about how your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal information. If any one of them isn't careful, it's a good bet they could accidentally expose your details to hackers and identity theft, putting you at risk. Fortunately, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back, with plans covering up to $3 million for stolen funds and expenses. Don't take chances with your personal info. Help protect it even when it's out of your hands. Save up to 40% your first year with promo code IHEART. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.
Chances are, you've been to the doctor recently, and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your social security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info. And if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.